challenges and the dimensions of the cilia, which is more for spot images. Okay, so we're sort of Yotze, both Shitas here. Chuma's Yotze also. So the core question in the sugya is, what does it mean when we say lifne iver lo titein mechshol? And the way I articulate the chakira, at least in more broader terms, is, are we actually trying to help this person, or are we actually, in our attempt to help this person, are we actively objectifying this person? What does that mean? A simple pshat of the term lifne iver lo titein mechshol means I'm not allowed to put a stumbling block before a blind person, okay? And presumably that's l'tovato, that's to his benefit, okay? But let's say, for argument's sake, he self-identifies as somebody who's not blind, but I think he is blind, right? So when I'm trying to help him, I'm making a claim about him which he fundamentally rejects. I'll give you an example. Let's say, for example, I put an axe, there's a famous shaila about what's called ein mikra yotze bidei pshuto. Right, whether or not the mikra can be sort of, what shot of a verse can be totally undermined. Okay, so in this case, it says lifnei iver lo titein mechshol. You can't put a stumbling block before a blind person. And the way it's understood by the chachamim is it means you can't take advantage of somebody. So, for example, if someone's a kohen, I can't say to a kohen, "Go marry this girl if I know she's a grusha." Right, I'm taking advantage of him. He's blind to facts. But let's say, for argument's sake, I actually put a stumbling block before a blind person. Like I actually took a stumbling block and put it from a blind person. Would I violate the prohibition of lifne iver lo titein mechshol? That is a machlokes achronim. But the simple pshat is no, because the context of the Torah is not talking about an actual blind person. It's talking about somebody who's blind to reality. Let's think about this for a second before we get to the sources. Let's say, for example, you think somebody is blind to reality, but they disagree. So, for example, let's say someone says to you, "Pass me that cheeseburger." Okay? And you say, "I don't want to do that because that would be a violation, at least rabbinically, of the phrase lifne iver lo titein mechshol, because he is blind, right, to the reality of kashrus." But he claims, "I'm not blind at all." In other words, I'm fully aware of hilchos kashrus, I just don't care. Okay? So if you're going to say it's all about helping the person, well, he doesn't care, right? But if you're going to say it's about something else, whatever that else we'll talk about later, then if you don't give him the cheeseburger because you think he's blind, so you're effectively objectifying him, meaning you're not treating him as an other, an independent entity, somebody who can make choices. You're saying that you are blind, even though you're claiming you're not blind. I know better than you. Okay, so that's why I conceptualize a sugya of, like, lifne iver, are we trying to help somebody, or is, in our attempt to help somebody, actually creating an objectification of the individual? Okay. Now, if you look, for example, at the sources I have, we'll go source by source here. So the first source on the page just shows you the context of the pasuk of lifnei iver. If you look at pasuk yudalid, it says, "Lo tikalel cheresh lifnei iver l'tein mechshol, v'yareitem elohecha. Lo tasu avo b'mishpat, lo tisap lifnei dal." So the context of the verse in Sefer Vayikra is clearly talking about what? Taking advantage of who? People who are weaker. In other words, you can't take advantage of somebody who theoretically is weaker. But there's an interesting phrase in Pasuk Yudalid, which presumably is redundant, where it says, "V'yareitem elohecha ani Hashem." I mean, why does it say that? It could just say, "Lifnei iver lo titein mechshol." Why does it say, "V'yareitem elohecha ani Hashem"? I'll get to that in a second. But if you look, for example, at Rashi in source number 3, Rashi quotes the Sifra. The Sifra is from what period? Period of Tanayim. Okay? It's Midrash Halacha. And Midrash Halacha says that this idea of lifnei iver, it's not literally he's blind. What does it mean? He's suma bidavar, meaning what? He's blind to the matter, blind to reality. That's what Rashi says. Look at Rashi says, "Lufi hasuma bidavar lo titein eitza she'ena hogeges lo." You're not allowed to do what? Give him bad advice. In other words, giving him bad advice is a violation of lifnei iver. Why? Because he's blind to the reality. Let's say, for example, someone says to you, "You know, here, I want to invest in a stock." You know the stock is bad. Okay, so you're not blind to that reality, but he is. You advise him on a poor stock. That would be a violation of lifnei iver lo titein mechshol. Well, how did they get that from the pasuk? So if you look, for example, source number 4, the Kli Yakar says, "Ein lefarish iver mamash u'mechshol mamash sharei ne'amar ve'yareitem elohecha v'zeh midaber b'davar hamusar l'leiv dafka." What's his claim? That the phrase "v'yareitem elohecha" is an attempt to qualify the idea of lifnei iver. How do we know that? Because let's say, for example, I put an actual stumbling block before the blind person. Then Yareitem Elohecha would be irrelevant. Let's say, for example, I give somebody bad advice. Why is it I should fear God? What's the argument? Because only God knows. In other words, only God knows what I'm doing. And since only God knows what I'm doing, I have a responsibility to fear God in that case. Meaning, the way the Mefarshim understand this, basically, is that the phrase, V'yiraytem Elohecha, qualifies the pasuk in a way that teaches you it shouldn't be read literally, it should be read more broadly. Meaning, even if somebody is a summa ladavar, he's not blind physically, but he's blind experientially to reality, so we can't take advantage of him. Okay, that's basically the biblical context to understand the passage of Lifnei Iver, and it shows why Lifnei Iver is not read by Chazal to be an actual blind person, but rather somebody simply blind to the facts. Okay, now the core sugya for dealing with Lifnei Iver is a discussion of Masechet Avodah Zarah. Okay, the Mishnah of Masechet Avodah Zarah says you're not allowed to do business with a non-Jew 3 days before his holiday. Okay, why not? The Gemara has a discussion. The Gemara says there's two possibilities. One possibility is, if you do business with him, let's say you do a major business transaction 3 days before his holiday, what's he going to do? He's going to be so excited that he's going to go offer a sacrifice. He's going to thank his God, right? And that is a problem. Even non-Jews are not allowed to engage in avodah zarah. So by doing that, you've sort of set him up, right? It's almost like a lifnei iver context, meaning you've set up reality where somebody else is going to do something which is problematic, okay? But then the Gemara has a qualifier, and it gives the following insight. The Gemara says, quotes a brisa. It says, "Hatan in the bold, Amar Rabbi Nasan, minayin shelo yoshi adam koshel yayin lenazir, the aver minachay leben Noach." What does that mean? You're not allowed to give a kosh yayin to a nazir or an aver minachay, right? A ripped off limb to a ben Noach. Tamalomar lifnei iro temechshol. Hahachad kilo yahavina an habe shaka yihu the kaaver mishum lifnei iver. Right, so the Gemara says, "Hachamay askinan deka betray aved nahar." This is the most important Gemara for understanding Lifnei Iver. The Gemara says you only violate the prohibition of Lifnei Iver if you enable the sin. Okay, if you facilitate the sin, it's not us serving up Torah. I'll give an example. Okay, let's say, for example, I'm on one side of a river, and the other side of the river is somebody else, and on my side of the river, I have a cheeseburger. This guy cannot access the cheeseburger independently of me. It's impossible, okay? If he asks me for the cheeseburger and I give it to him, I have violated the biblical prohibition of lifnei iver. What's the logic? I have enabled the sin. In other words, the sin could not have happened without me. I'm a partner in his crime, and therefore I violate a biblical prohibition. Masha'enkin, let's say, for example, he's standing right next to me, and he says, "Pass me the cheeseburger." In that case, it's only, at best, a rabbinic prohibition of misayeya la'ovrei avera, because he can do it himself. If you're facilitating the sin, right, it's not biblically prohibited. If you're enabling the sin, it is biblically prohibited. You with me so far? Okay? Now, what's interesting is that the Gemara, when it talks about examples of lifnei iver, it mentions specifically two categories. Who are the people? An aver min achai to a ben noach, and a kos to a nazir. Give me 1 second. A kos yayin to a nazir. If you look at source number 6, now this is where all the exciting lumdus, if you're interested in lumdus, this is where it all comes to a head. Okay? Tosvot here in source number 6 is the key sugi, is the key Tosvot to understanding the whole mystery of lifnei iver. Well, watch what Tosvot says here. Let me spend some time on this. Let's really flesh this out. Tosvot says, "Nira dehu adin bekol shar isurim." What's bothering Tosvot? What's bothering Tosvot is, why does it mention these specific isurim? Why does it mention specifically aver min achai to ben Noach? And also the yayin to another. Why not mention anything? Why not say cheeseburger to somebody else? So what does he say? Those are only examples. But really that applies to all isur. I mean, whenever you would have an isur, if you were to enable the sin, it would be biblically prohibited. What does he say? What does he say? The hachi naka kos yayin l'nazir, mishum debestama l'mishte ka baile. Kevan dechule al-machab rishatu, v'shema nishkach naziraso. What's he saying here? Why is mentioning these examples? Because these are people who can easily forget their legal status. Think about a nazir. He lives in a world where what? Everybody else drinks wine. So if everybody else drinks wine, it's easy for him to say, "Wait a second, you know, can you give me some wine too?" Forgetting, right, that he is a nazir. Or for example, a Gentile. He lives in a world where people eat aver min achai. He can forget, theoretically, that he is not allowed to eat aver min achai. And therefore the chiddush is that we know definitively that what? He really doesn't want to do what he's asking to do, but he got stuck. Now, why is this important for Tosvot? Because the implication for Tosvot is that, in theory, if the guy definitively knew what he was doing, and he rejected the whole category, So presumably, it wouldn't be a problem. Meaning, the way Toso reads the Gemara, he says, ah, those are examples of people who live in a world where the prohibition is normative, okay? They themselves don't want to do it, but they forgot. It'd be the equivalent to Chaim Stanton saying to me, hey, Rav Tov, pass me a cheeseburger. I would know Chaim Stanton has no interest in eating a cheeseburger, right? So in that case, I would say to him, I can't do it. If I enable the sin, it's a biblical prohibition. Clearly, he is blind, he's objectively blind to his reality, right? And there's no reality where Chaim Stanton wants to eat a cheeseburger, and there's no reality where the Nazir wants to drink wine. Yeah, Joey first, go ahead. What did he say? Okay, yeah. It could be, although oftentimes when it says Akum, it's a censor term. In other words, it's tough to know when the Gemara uses a term about a non-Jew, is it censor of the original, right? Because remember, originally in Gemara it says Goy, and then the censors come along and change it to Akum because they want to show the Christians that it doesn't refer to them, right?
It could still be that, like, all the terms they use for non-Jews and, like, they know are, like,
no, but the Chiddush of Bnei Noach, that all people are basically Bnei Noach are chayav in the Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach. All non-Jews are chayav in that. So the idea is that if a non-Jew basically asks you for something, and he's somebody who you know is particular about this thing, so you would assume, well, why is he asking you? He forgot, right? All non-Jews can't eat Ibn Achai. It's one Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach, right? So the Chiddush is, if a non-Jew asks you for it, he probably forgot. This is assuming a reality. This non-Jew, you know, it takes it seriously. Okay?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That the point is that if somebody, if it was like somebody who
okay, fine, yeah, exactly. Someone doesn't care.
Right.
Yeah, okay, exactly. Yeah.
Isn't that still an assumption that the reality is that they forgot and not that they know?
Of course it's an assumption, but it doesn't matter. The concept for Toso, which is a key point here, is that let's say Eber always deals with a case where the person is not doing it but makes it. You understand? In other words, it doesn't make a difference whether Toso is right on the facts. The concept emerges independently. What's the concept? Lifnei Iver assumes that the person in front of me is blind to the facts. If I were to tell him the facts, what would he do? Not do it. Okay? If he does do it, that's a problem. But in theory, that's also its claim here. Okay? Yeah.
When the Gemara explains the scenario, oh, you can't do it because of Lifnei Iver, is the Gemara limiting all violations of Lifnei Iver to this category, or is this a category where Lifnei Iver?
No, all violations of Lifnei Iver are only biblically prohibited according to the Gemara if you enable the sin. If you facilitate the sin according to the Gemara, everything is derabanan.
No, understood. But are there other categories that you can do a wrong thing that's also considered Lifnei Iver? Meaning, I understand what the Gemara is doing is, or in the sense of expanding it to all enabling of sin. But what if you, Gemara not consider enabling a bad thing if there's some sort of category that's not, like,
what else could it be? No, the only bad thing would be an aver, right? Absent the aver, what is it, right? You can have like a lot of lumdas, like if you do is it an aver, you know, a problem in a suffix aver? But those are lumdas questions. But the point is that the key principle is the aver, okay? Yeah.
Wouldn't living aver, like literally doing it, also fall into the category of living aver? As in, like, if I am putting a stumbling block in front of a person, I'm going to end up, like, I'm literally making someone mess up in an area that they're blind.
Oh, for sure, but the chiddush is that you already know that from other psukim, right? So the idea is that because it's v'yirei d'melel hechad, expands it. Okay, let me show you one last line, and we'll go on questions. What it says here, Tosafot says, aval Yisrael she'amar hoshi li nevela, right? If a Jew says, give me nevela, oh chazir, oh shum iser, in lechosh shum ilahoshi lo. You follow? Tosafot's saying, if you know the guy, right, is a from. Let's say, for example, David Edwards says, "Give me a piece of nevela." I know he's not going to eat it, so I can give it to him. Right? Why can't I give it to him? Because there's no havmi to actually eat it. He wants to use it for, I don't know, something else. Okay? Look what he says here: "Aval im yadua lo shirotze laochlo, also lahoshi lo." What's the chiddush here? If you know that a Jew, right, is going to eat it, he also pushes back. What does he say now? If you know he's going to eat it, right, it's still usher. Why? And he says, Afilu Hushalo, meaning I won't get too involved in Gemara. If you look, for example, at the last line, he says, "Hunesar lahem deki Yisrael gamur chashvinan le." What's his point here? Let's think about this Toso for a second. Toso is saying, Toso starts in the beginning by saying, ah, these are examples of guys who there's a good possibility that what's going to happen, they're going to do the Isser. Okay? But if you know a guy's not going to do the Isser, you can give it to him. But then in the third category, Toso switches. What does he say? If you know that he's going to do the Isser, And you know that he's blind. He's not blind to the reality, but he knows he wants a cheeseburger. Tosfot says, we consider him ki Yisrael gomer. The chesh of Tosfot here is that there are two chidushim. The first is that it applies to all men. So that's number one. But this, to all Yisrael. But the second chesh is that no matter what, even if the person knows the facts, even if he wants to eat a cheeseburger, mezid, right? So he is still considered blind from the halacha's perspective, and therefore you can't give him anything. Meaning, let's say, for example, someone says to you, pass me a cheeseburger, okay? And you're on the other side of a river. You know he's not a frum guy. He knows he doesn't keep kosher. It would still be usher for you to give it to him. The question is why, right? He's a mumar. He's somebody who's not frum at all. How could you possibly say you're taking advantage of him? He knows the facts, right? Remember, Rashi says that the idea of lifnei iver is that he's suma l'davar. He's blind to the facts. What about this case? He's not blind at all. He knows all the facts. So how could it possibly be a violation of lifnei iver according to Tosfot? Yeah. No, but that's the point. Rashi says the blind lit davar specifically. He's blind right now. He can become.
I'm saying, like, then it wouldn't have used the word blind because a blind person can't later see it. I feel like there are much better words to use there, like I don't know, Kalas Rosh or something.
It could be, but the way Rashi and the Mefarshim read it basically is that blind means blind to the facts right now. I hear what you're saying, but they read it differently. They read it that blind is temporary. He will be able to see in the future, but right now he can't see. Right, so don't take advantage of him. But my point is, here's my kasha. My kasha is, how can Tosfot say this? How can Tosfot say that that a blind person, the Isser applies to him? But if the guy is not blind, I would think about it this way. The Torah says, lifnei iver. All the Mefarshim, Rashi, based on the Sifra, everybody says, it applies to bad advice. I mean, the guy is blind b'davar. Here the guy is not blind b'davar at all. If he's not blind b'davar at all, so why can't you give it to him? Like, why is it your fault? Right? What's going on here? Yeah, Levis.
It seems like Tosfot someone were to like actually know Torah and know why we do mitzvos, obviously they wouldn't make that choice to eat the cheeseburger.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go with Lev's argument, okay? It seems to me that Tosfot is saying that the person's blind even though he doesn't claim to be blind. This gets back to what I said at the beginning, which is, well, are you actually helping him in that case or doing what? Objectifying him, right? Because you're telling him he's blind. He's not blind. I mean, he is not blind to the facts. He knows, right, the idea that you can't keep not kosher. But he doesn't care. So he's not blind at all to the facts. So you can say to him, had you been to yeshiva, you would have understood it. So it's so ironic, right? Because it starts off at lifnei iver is about helping a friend, don't take advantage. But it transitions to a category where it's about, wait a second, I know better than you. And even though you claim, right, to think that you're not blind, deep down you are blind. Now, I'll show you one source that corroborates your reading. Look what it says. This is in the Sridei Eish. Okay, the Sridei Eish has a tshuva about lifnei iver, and he quotes here from the Rambam. Okay, look at the Rambam says here. The Rambam is in Hilchos Rotzeach. The Rambam says ko amach shil iver bedavar, for he see eight such inu hogeges. Right, if you set up a stumbling block in front of a blind person, or give him bad advice, o shechizik over avera shehu iver veinu roet derech emes. Ibn Tava Slibo. Classic medieval codifier. What does he say? What are the key lines here? Ibn Tava Slibo. Okay? What's the Rambam's chiddush here? The Rambam's chiddush is there's no such thing in the Rambam's world as a principled non-believer. Dove Edwards, don't get mad at me. I didn't say the Rambam did. Okay? So what's going on here? There's no such thing as a principled non-believer. That's what he says. You're not blind. It's not a question of blind to reality, like you know what's going on. Blind to the ultimate reality. That's what he's saying. Eino roa derecha emes, mizei tavas libo. Look at the Rambam, look at the next part. He quotes the Rambam, he says, this is Sridesh. Hare kashim, madua over hamach shilas chaver, im chaver yodea, sheish kan iser. Hare ne'amar lifnei iver l'tinei michshol. Right? Why do you violate the iser? He knows what's going on. V'dafka iver sheino roa whatever, that part's less critical. But you see, in other words, the Rambam goes the direction of Levin. Why is it a classic medieval approach? Because the Rambam thinks that these types of claims, like religion, right, are objectively demonstrable. Right? And therefore he thinks if a person says, pass me a cheeseburger, he really is blind. Because if he would study, if he would understand basic philosophy and metaphysics, he would understand. You shouldn't eat a cheeseburger, okay? But if you go the Maimonidean route, then basically what you have to say is the following. The Torah initially says, Lifnei Iver. It's understood by Rashi and the Sifra to be not talking about a blind person, but about somebody who doesn't understand the facts. You don't want to take advantage of your friend, okay? Tosfot extends it and says, wait a second, it's not only about taking advantage of your friend, it's about ensuring, right, that halacha is observed by other Jews, even if they're not blind to reality. So in that way, how are you helping him? So you have to say, like the Rambam says, what Aaron Levitt is saying, is that he is blind, right? He's blind because he doesn't know the facts. If he knew the facts, then he wouldn't be blind, which is ironic, right? Because then it's no longer really generating a sense of, like, I'm trying to help you out, right? Because you're basically saying is, I don't take you seriously, right? I don't take your claim seriously. You help the guy out by not taking his claim seriously. So that's why this model of the Tosfot, Aliber to the Rambam, is conceptually problematic. Because it assumes on some level that Lifnei Iver grants me access to the truth. I can't take advantage of anybody, even somebody who claims to know the truth. And my counter-argument to him is, you don't really know the truth. Okay, that, I think, is Shitas HaRambam. Yeah.
Back to the Tosfos. Is he saying that the only case where it's not an Esoteric is if he's not blind and you are uncertain if he'll eat it or not?
No. It's only a non-Esoteric if he can access the Aveira independently of you. So, for example, if I have a cheeseburger right here and you say, pass it to me, and I go like this, it's an Isidore bun. Whereas if there's a cheeseburger on that side of the basement, the only way to get to it is if I throw it to you, that would be Isidore rice. That's the sheet. Okay? Yeah.
Why is it that every case that we deal with is a case where, like, I guess the person who's stumbling is engaging in Isidore as opposed to just doing something that's detrimental to themselves?
No, the idea basically is that the person, Isser just means, right, and sorry, the listening Heber is not necessarily telling him that you're giving him trade food. It could also be, for example, that's what the Rambam says, give him bad advice, right? In other words, whenever you're doing something which the consequence is bad for that person, it's a problem. So that makes sense to me. In other words, if you tell me, don't take advantage of somebody. Let's say, for example, someone says, I want to invest in the stock market, and you know it's a bad investment, right? Don't tell him to do it. That makes sense. That's listening Heber. It's part of the context in the Torah of taking advantage of you. I got it. But that's also says, no, it's more than that. It's that anybody who's blind to reality, I have a responsibility to protect him. Now, that's a hard question why that is. So one model says what Levin says. I'm sure Moshe finds he disagrees. But what Levin said is that he's blind to the facts, he doesn't know any better. Okay, yeah, Sage.
If facilitating sin is only considered
derabana, would it constitute shvut to facilitate derabana? That's called lifnei delifnei, right? That's where I'm going to talk about that. What's called lifnei delifnei. In other words, how far removed do you have to be? I'll give you an example, okay? Is it a problem on Shabbos? Let's say, for example, you want to do overnight mail, right? So overnight mail, right, in other words, it will definitely come on Shabbos if you order Friday afternoon, okay? So they pilpul about, let's lick lifnei iver. In other words, like, he's definitely going to do it. Say it's a Jewish mailman, whatever. So they say, let's say you order, let's say it goes from person A to person B, and person B to person C. It's like lifnei to lifnei, right? So how far do you go to it? I'm not sure how luckily how we pass it, okay? Yeah.
Would this argument that Sri Aisha is saying also carry over, let's say, like,
Yeah, we'll get to that. Exactly. It's the same idea. In other words, the concept is the same exact thing, right? In other words, I'll give you an example, okay? So we'll see this in a few minutes, but let's say, for example, you want to invite a non-religious Jew over your house on Shabbos. Actually, I'll tell you, let's say you want to do that. Let's say, for example, you have a friend, he's not religious, or a relative who's not religious. Can you invite him over your house on Shabbos, right? So presumably, you should not be allowed to do that. Why not? They're going to drive. So you can say they're going to drive anyway. Okay, so therefore what? It's an Issa Darabana, it's not Issa Daraisa, okay? But presumably, you should not be allowed to do that. Okay? Now let's say, for example, that there is a tshuva from Shlomo Zalman Orbach where he says that what you could do is you can offer them a place to stay, and if they don't take it, then it's not a problem. Why not? Yeah. It's their choice. Meaning you didn't facilitate any sin or enable any sin. You gave them the option. They basically, by them choosing not to, right, then it's fine. Okay? So now, again, imagine that conversation. I'll give an example. I have a friend who went to yeshiva that became not from. So he called me. I was living in Riverdale. He's like, I'm coming to New York. Let's hang out on Friday night. I said, great. He goes, and if he's not from New York. He goes, and if you offer me a place to stay, I'm not coming. Okay? But it captures the point. Why not? Because if I offer him a place to stay, then I'm saying to him, basically, and he's a learned guy, if I offer him a place to stay, I'm saying to him, he's blind. He's not blind. He learned yeshivas. He doesn't learn the Torah. He'll be from. So he's not willing to come to my house if I objectify him with the claim, oh, you know what? You have a place to stay. I'll give you another example. In Israel, they had a whole thing where they wanted to encourage Chilonim and Datim to get, to sort of have Shabbos lunch together. This big organization. So they put ads in the paper, invite somebody over. So I said, how do you deal with an Iver? So they have all these tricks, like on the bottom, like, you know, invite him over on Friday night, offer him a place to stay.
But I said it's amazing because the whole point of the meeting is to have two groups of equals meet. But the second I'm telling him, hey, buddy, you can stay at my house, I think you're a kofer, it's not a conversation of equals, right? So in other words, it's an interesting question about, like, what does it mean to conceptualize Lifnei Iver Ali Badu to the Rambam and Tosfot? Yeah, yeah.
Why even
no, let's say they can't. Let's say they live 5 miles away. Yeah, assume that's the case. It's 5 miles away. Yeah.
Why are we, if we believe that what the Torah says is exactly what's best for a person, why are we assuming that by telling them that they're sitting or they're going or they're coming over here, why are we assuming that it's like a bad to objectify them? The only problem should be to make sure that we're not filtering like the situation or the Torah through our own lives.
No, fair enough. But my point is that, in other words, it's not a problem per se to say, for example, I think you're wrong. Right? But presumably, you do want to respect other people's decisions. I mean, if a person says, I'm willing to take the punishment in your divine world, like, why should we care? Right? In other words, even if I think the person's making a mistake, great, so I can think that in my head. But why should I be able to say, he will be punished? Right? I'll give you an example. They have, like, the women of the wall, right? So Harim go bonkers about it and do all these crazy things. Now, it's terrible. But the biggest problem with it is it's a Miman HaShach argument. If you think it's so bad, let God take care of it. In other words, it's almost like them getting involved shows the pagam in their real emuna in divine intervention. Right? Because if you think it's so bad, great, God will zap them. Right? If they're really being metame the mikdash, God will zap them. Right? But you see, it's a good example. It's like, if you think women in law is so bad, keep it to yourself. Right? In other words, there's no reason for you to say to somebody in this case, like, hey, I'll give you my house. Like, he understands what he's doing. It's like a risk. If I tell you, for example, you can do X, you may get corona. So you say, I want to take a risk. So if I say to the person, you can drive to my house, but you may be chayav skila. And he's like, great, I like rocks. Right? The point is that, well, why should that be a problem? He's made the choice. Okay? Now, let me show you two other things. Now, look what it says here. If you look, for example, at the Shach. The Shach in Yoredeya disagrees with the Tosfot, okay? And he says, basically, look at the last line, he says, Mash'enkin be'ovei kochavim v'yisrael mumar, eino chayv l'hafrisha. Okay? The Shach says, that when it comes to the Isur d'oraisa of Ne'iver, there may be a problem across the board. When it comes to the Isur d'rabanan, it may not be. Okay? It may not be a problem for a mumar. What would the logic be? Yeah? They're not blind. In other words, they know the reality. I have no obligation to separate them from their reality. It's their choice, and that's it. Okay? Now, if you look, for example, at, turn the page for a second. If you look, for example, at the Igros Moshe. Okay? Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva on this, and he has a very different way to conceptualize Lifnei Iver, which is very different than the Tosfot, Aliba de Srid Eish. Look what he says here. He says, El Tsarich Lomar de Eish Shnei in Yonim Bilav Lifnei Iver. That's a code word for what yeshivas were. Tzvedinim, okay, or Tzvedinim if you're Hungarian or Polish, okay? But basically, Tzvedinim is the idea that there are two dimensions to the Isser. What is it? Hamachshil beguf hu me'inyan bein aram l'chavero. This is a great chav. This will answer Tzviki's question, okay? Hamachshil beguf, meaning what? When you actually engage in Lifnei Iver, right, with like a goof or something physical, right, it's bein aram l'chavero. It is actually interpersonal. But if you're machshir him with an iser, who inyan bin adam lemakom, she'aser lasos michshol t'chait ba'olah. But this is an amazing Rav Moshe, okay? What's Rav Moshe saying here? Rav Moshe is saying here, there's tzvai dinim, I'm Hungarian and Polish, okay? So when there's tzvai dinim when it comes to Lifnei Iver. There's a dimension which is interpersonal, and there's a dimension between you and God. How can you use Rav Moshe conceptually to solve the objectification problem? Here's what I think. Rav Moshe, let's say, for example, Tzviki invites somebody, right, and he comes to his house for Shabbos, and he says to him, I'm offering you a place to stay. Why is that not objectifying him in Rav Moshe's world? Because you can say to somebody, listen, I totally respect your decision. I have no personal problem I don't like it, but I don't have a personal problem if you drive. But in my theological universe, when people drive, what happens? It creates cosmic chaos. That's what Moshe calls it. Chet ba'olam. Right? There's chet in the world. And therefore, there's two expressions of this na'iver. The first expression is, I have a responsibility to you. If you don't care, I'm no longer responsible. But I have a responsibility to the way I perceive the world. And in my world, when a Jew does an avera, right, it creates cosmic dissonance. If you go this model, then the nafkamina would be, think about the machlokas, Tosfos, or the Sridi Eish versus Rav Moshe. The Sridi Eish, according to the Rambam, right, and the Tosfos would say, you are blind to the facts. According to Rav Moshe, you could say, you know what? You're not blind to the facts. You know reality. But you know what? The same way I respect your reality, what I want you to do, respect my reality. And in my reality, I think that if a Jew does an Avera, it creates cosmic chaos. And since it creates cosmic chaos, I have to try my best to neutralize that. And by trying my best to neutralize that, I'm being honest with you that I'm not objectifying you. But I'm also being honest with me in the sense that I do believe in my world, no Jew should be driving. So if you think of the Rav Moshe model, it's very different than the Levitt model, right? Because the Levitt model assumes I know better. This one assumes I don't know better. But I believe in my world more than yours. I respect your choices. But I want you to understand that in my world, which I also want you to respect, I don't want people to drive, right? That's my reality. As opposed to saying my reality is right and yours is wrong, you're simply saying, same way I respect your choice to drive, I want you to respect my choice to offer you an option not to drive. Yeah.
So by Rav Moshe's model, shouldn't you not give them another option either way, not giving Tokto when they're doing a bear, because then it's a lower level, it's like showing around them.
Why? I mean, the Tokto question is a separate question. He's talking about here whether you want to invite somebody over. I mean, let's say, for example, you invite them over on Shabbos, right? So they don't have to drive on Shabbos. They can drive before Shabbos. But they will drive on Shabbos, right? They will. So the question becomes, is that a problem with the Ever? So the answer is yes. The question is why? They're not blind. So the Tosafot and the Rambam would say they are blind. So I'm trying to say it's another way to conceptualize it, which doesn't force you to say that, which allows you to say, no. There's same dinim in Lifnei Ever. There's Bnei Elam Makom, they're not blind. Bnei Elam Chaver, they're not blind. Bnei Elam Makom, they are blind. So but Bnei Elam Makom operates in my world independently of them. In other words, my world, I'll give you an example. My friend invited me to a wedding. He was married to a non-Jew. So I said, we're very close. So I said, I can't come. I'm a Ben Tayer. We don't go to intermarriages. So he said to me, he said, I knew you would say that, but why not? I said, it was Josh. He said, Josh, the same way I respect your decision to marry a non-Jew, you should respect my decision not to come. He's like, you're right, good point. In other words, like, if I said to him, like, your mom is a kofar, marrying a non-Jew, according to the Rambam, is the biggest issue in the world, I lost all credibility. If I say to him, I wouldn't marry a non-Jew ever, but I respect your decision to do it, but the same way I respect your decision, you should respect my decision not to come. Meaning, civility is not one-directional. So what I'm trying to say here is that Rav Moshe Feinstein sort of changes the model to open up a category that says there's always two levels here. There's the interpersonal, and there's more macro, b'nei elam makom, which is how do I conceptualize the world? Yeah, Noah.
Well, at least in the Rav Moshe, there would be more 35 on like the driving issue anyways, because we know that already he calls somebody who like...
Mason, yeah.
Yeah, Mason.
So, yeah.
Like, maybe like you can say like conceptually with the context of Mifnei Eber that we should, but like driving, like inviting somebody over for Shabbos, I assume he would like...
He definitely wouldn't look cool, but this explains why not. Because once you throw in the dimension, I was using Rav Moshe to explain the Shor Shlomo Zalman psak. But this makes sense why Rav Moshe is always going to be machmir. Because he's going to say, even if you've neutralized the Bnei Elam Chavero, you're always going to have the Bnei Elam Makom. So it's not going to help. In other words, Rav Moshe's tshuva in his world generates chumros. He's extremely machmir on this, right? What I'm trying to say is that even if you wanted to apply the svara outside of Rav Moshe's world, it would, in theory, allow the possibility of some mechanism of a kula, right? Assuming you thought the legal mechanism works, but the language you use is qualitatively different than the Tosafot and the Rambam, right? It's a totally different language, okay? Yeah.
Why is it really a global issue? You should also just respect the fact that you have an issue of Lifnei Ever that you're trying to also do.
Right? No, I understand, but Lifnei Ever, that's what I'm trying to say. Lifnei Ever bepash is a Ben Machavero. So that's not a problem.
I'm saying if you ban Machavero in both directions.
It's not, though. It's been on the, but Lifnei Ever means I can't take advantage of somebody. You can't take advantage of him. He knows the facts.
I'm saying the Chilonim should also respect the fact that you have an Isser.
Of course, but the point is your Isser is only a function of him. It's not an independent Isser. In other words, that's what I'm trying to say. The Pashas Lifnei Ever has been on the Mach L'Chaveiro. And therefore, if he knows the facts, he doesn't care. It's not a problem anymore. But I'm saying Rav Moshe is trying to say there is a problem because there's another dimension which is not about him. It's about God. Right? And that's why it's such a compelling svara. Okay?
Just clarify, it's between you and God. It's not between
No, but it's between you and God. But the point is that you're not allowed in any way. You live in a world where you don't want sin, right? So therefore, your responsibility is to make sure there's no sin in the world. Not me din him, din gut me din the world. Chet ba'olam. That's what Moshe is saying here, right? The chet ba'olam is the problem. The problem is not his sin.
How does that fit into Lifnei Ever, though?
Because Lifnei Ever is two dimensions, right? I can't create sin, and if I create sin by extension, I have compromised his ben lo makom ben chavero. There's another element which is that even if he's moved out of the facts and he says I don't care, I still have responsibility to the world and I have sin.
And you're responsible.
I'm responsible for that. So that's what he says. Chet la'olam, right? Also lasos nichshol lechet la'olam. That's what he said. Yeah.
In the example you used, how does not going to the wedding create like less cosmic chaos?
But what the assumption would be is that if you sell, let's assume for argument's sake that going, well, it's a separate conversation, but going to an intermarriage and celebrating it is a problem of X. Whatever that X is, it creates less cosmic chaos, right? That's still given in how we would conceptualize that. Yeah?
So according to the motion model, do you still have to like ask them if they want to stay over Friday night, or is that not needed anymore? Because
Ramosha's model would be a chumrah. Ramosha's model would say the pashas you can't have them at all because, in other words, the sleeping. Think about Ramosha's model. Ramosha would say if you offer him a place to stay and he doesn't take it, Rishon's model would say you neutralize the benam lechavero and therefore you're fine. Ramosha would say yeah, but you haven't neutralized benam lemakom. So therefore it's always also. You'll see in a second. Ramosha's always mocking around this. Okay, let me just show you one thing. We'll keep going. Let's see a few examples of this in halacha. Okay, it's really some remarkable stuff. If you look, for example, the Shulchan Aruch says in source number 10. Lo yitim lechol el lemish yode lo shivarech. Okay, it's not exactly the easiest halacha to follow. Let's say, for example, you're a rebbe in a raita, and the first day of yeshiva comes, and you know they have everybody come on the roof and give out falafels, and a guy says to me, "Can you pass me a falafel?" So we usually hold kol de parish miruba parish. Most all right, the guys day one probably don't wash. Right? So the assumption of me is that I'm not allowed to give him the what's it called? The falafel. It says it right here, right? Lo yitim lechol el lemish yode shivarech. You can't give food to somebody unless you know he's going to say a bracha. Why not? That's neighbor, right? Now, even if he can access food anyway. Okay, so it's also derbanan. Look at the Taz. The Taz says, Zedas hari, near a time with the mitzvah, that we can eat, know about right now. Okay? Question becomes, is that really true? Right? Is it always the case they can't do it? So let's think about the conceptual models, right? Let's think about, for example, Shitas Rashi, then Tosfot, and then the Rambam. What would they say, yeah? Hold on a second. Let's think about Rashi and Tosfot. What would they say, yeah? What would they say about Rashi and Tosfot, about the case of give the guy a food? Why can't he do it? Why can't you give him food? He's blind. He's blind to the facts, right? If he had studied more, he would know. What would Ramosha say? Why can't you do it? Because either way, even if he's blind to the facts, right? So you still have the problem, even if he's not blind to the facts, you still have the problem of what? Okay? Now look what Rishonim Zalman says here. This is amazing. Rishonim Zalman here is talking about a case of a guy who is presumably not that from, but he is somebody who supports yeshivas, right? And he is somebody who's invested, I guess, philanthropically or in the general world, right, in Torah, but he himself is not that from. Okay? So what happens? Let's say, for example, you have a yeshiva, let's say you call yeshiva X, and the biggest donor is not from. It's a fairly common phenomenon, okay? So he comes to visit the yeshiva, and he says, "Can I have some Coke?" And someone goes to him, "Listen, I'll give you a soda, but you're not from." Right? So, and I know it says in Shulchan Aruch, you can't do that. It's a gakasha. How do you navigate that? So look what he says. Look what Shlomo Zalman says. He says, "Behad tzarich kol adam lasum drachav l'chavim masa v'shem shemayim." Okay, everybody obviously has to act in the sake of heaven. And he talks about the case of this specific scenario. And look what he says. He says, "Biglav zeshim in the bowl." Shmitzad habdin aser l'tein lechol el lemish yodea shenatal yada umivarech. Right? He's really not supposed to do it. But then he says, in the three lines on the bottom, what does he say? You can't do it. How can you do it? He says, "V'lo lach shos klal iser shalifnei iver." Why not? Mishum da'af she'ein omrim la'adam la'asod isur zuta de'lahatzu acher misur rabba. Even though you can't tell somebody to do a short-term iser, or to say them for a long-term iser, but iser vaday la'afrish shumus ma'isus b'shabas de'lignatzu b'kach acher misur chomer shel tevel. But you don't need that in our case. Hoil the call iser shel hanotein lo lechol hurak avera shel netinas, right? Netinas mechshol, right? The whole nature of lifting iver is what? You can't place a stumbling block. The kevan sheim lo yitein lo lechol harehu yikashel halreach the iser yoter gadol. What's his point here? What's his claim here? His claim is that you can't evaluate listening to Iver locally. You have to evaluate it how? Globally. Meaning what? Let's say, for example, you alienate this guy. So right now, he's a traditional Jew. Okay? But if you alienate him from Torah Mitzvot, what's going to happen? Forget about Chilul Hashem. He'll do more Averas more broadly. Meaning what? The listening to Iver has to be evaluated like in a larger scale. Right? If, for example, causing him to do this Avera will save him from 50 Averas in the future, so in theory, that's not a problem with Lifnei Iver. Lifnei Iver is only one directional, meaning I do X, it will lead to Y. But if X leading to Y, right, will ultimately save this person from Z, D, and E, That's not a problem of Ne'ivim, right? So Rosh Hashanah, again, Pesach Halacha, we can hold off here for a second, but conceptually, what's his point? His point is that Lif Ne'iver is a type of Isser where A will lead to B, okay? But if A leading to B will ultimately lead to C, and that C is a net positive, that's not a problem with Lif Ne'iver. Now, if you think about it, which model is he working with? Not Rav Moshe Feinstein, rather who? Tosfos and the Rambam. Because what's he saying? It's all about the Amal Chaveiro. And therefore, my responsibility to this person is to his global life, not his life right now. So when I think about it, I don't think about him right in the moment. I think about his observance in general. Now, according to this logic, how would he justify inviting somebody over on Shabbos? What would you say? Yeah, because by inviting them over for Shabbos, he may start to keep mitzvot. And by that logic, presumably, it's sure you're doing a short-term aveira here, but it's in service of a much bigger thing. If you don't invite him to your house, right, what's going to happen? He's going to go to a basketball game, whatever. He's never experienced Shabbos. But Rosh Shlomo Zalman, again, is working within the world of Tosfot and the Rambam, and he's trying to say is that, listen, Ever is about adversely affecting somebody spiritually. But that adverse effect is not necessarily one action to one action. To think about how the action will have a ripple effect more broadly. Yeah?
Conceptually, makes sense, but when I actually put that into practice, it seems pretty arbitrary, you know?
How do you evaluate? How do you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly. That's a fair question. Yeah, how do you know? How would it work? Yeah, because someone could say, for example, he'll have a bad experience, that he doesn't like the food in the yeshiva, and then he's going to hate it even more, right? Yeah, it's a good question. Okay, yeah.
What's the relationship between, this case of, you not giving in the Coke, and, Tokhapa, and how, is that an example of Tokhapa and,
Well, tochacha is a separate category. I mean, how do you deal with someone who's doing something wrong? But let's hold up. Let's keep that for a second. We got tochacha, right? Yeah. This is the guy says. The guy says, give me the food. No, but you can't give him tochacha for whatever reason, right? The question is, can't give him the food. Practically, can you give him the food? Think about it. I'm sure some of you have relatives or people you know who don't say brachas. Can't give him the food. It happens all the time. Halach lomai is all the time. Right? Can you imagine if you went home for Pesach and your relative said to you, pass me a drink, and don't say brachas. That would not go over all that well, right? But it's an interesting question conceptually. How are you allowed to do that? So you have to say this svarik of Shlomo Zalman, that it's not a local question, right? It's a global question. How would people perceive you, your identity, et cetera, et cetera, if you started to think about things in these terms? Yeah. For sure, but Rav Moshe is always going to be machmir. You follow? The svara of Rav Moshe is different than Rav Shlomo Zalman. Because Rav Shlomo Zalman is always thinking in the world of Ben-El Mufchavero. Okay? And since that's the case, he wants to say, wait a second, we should be more makel here, because if I don't do the X, right, it will create a disaster of his religious life. Rav Moshe is going to be more machmir, because Rav Moshe is going to say, even if I can solve the Amal Chaveiro, I'll look at the other problem.
But then, with Rav Moshe, isn't the most important thing how much total sin is happening in the world?
Okay.
So then, if you know this will decrease...
Good question, but Rav Moshe would say, you know this B'Torah Zvada, that's a very good question. Rav Moshe would say, I only know, that's kind of what JJ was saying, I only know right now B'Torah Zvada will happen. I don't really know what's going to happen in the future. Right? And therefore, it's a suffix. Think about math, right? If I have a vadai 10 out of 10, and a suffix maybe 11 out of 10, so I do the 10 out of 10.
So, what about the case of inviting someone over for Shabbos? You know for a fact they're going to continually be breaking Shabbos all night if you don't invite them. But if you do, they're going to drive to your house and then they're going to have Shabbos.
You don't know that for sure. No, you really know the false sleep. In other words, if you think about the sin in a cosmic sense, you have no idea what's going to happen. Right? They may pass out. Right? The point is that if you imagine the world that way, then you think about things differently. I hear what you're saying. It's subtle in terms of thinking about how you move from A to B. But the idea would be is that if you're thinking about cosmic sin, the more sin you see right now, that's the problematic thing.
So you could just say you could have as much doubt. If they don't explicitly say they're driving, you have as much doubt that they're going to break Shabbos.
Look, I'll show you, for example, look what he says here. Look at Rav Moshe Feinstein, next source, look what he says here. Rav Moshe Feinstein's talking about your case, okay? And look what he says. Nishalti meharav Naftali Karlbach. This is not the Shlomo Karlbach. Okay, look what he says. Me Detroit. Okay, me Detroit. Yimiyesh Yisrof ne'ivir lahazmi anashim she'avol le'palel b'shabbos. L'beit ha'knesset she'odeh she'chalu shabbos b'nesiyah b'... What's the next word?
Machines.
Okay? Right, and to see it in machines. Okay, can you? Machines is a hamish way to say cars. Okay, all right. The point is that you know he's going to drive in machines. Okay. Why is it? You know, it's actually I heard a great story that Rav Dov Feinstein was in New York and Rav Amar, who was the chief rabbi at the time, Sfarad chief rabbi, was also in New York, and they were at an event together, and people came over and asked Rav Feinstein, why, this is a famous shiur of Moshe. Everybody wants to understand, why does Rav Moshe say that if you invite somebody over, it's a violation of Macy? What's Macy? Enticing. Okay, enticing. So all these yeshivish guys are asking, why does he say it's a problem of Macy? Why is it a problem of Macy? Why is it a problem of Macy? So Rosh Hashanah Muhammad doesn't speak English. So he's like, oh, Macy? Chanut Begadim? Anyway, that's a good yeshiva joke. But basically, so what you're seeing here is your emotion is very machmir. Why is it very machmir? Because again, in his world, whenever you start thinking about inviting somebody over, it does make a difference if long term it's going to help them. You know, right now, it gets in the car, you're done, right? Whereas in Rosh Shlomo Zalman's world, he would say it's a total sort of cost benefit, right? That's the idea, yeah.
Situation. I don't really care about what you're doing. I'm just trying to cover my back in my realm. So, like, how does like Derek Eretz come out of Torah?
Wouldn't be a problem. It's very Derek Eretz oriented because you're saying to me explicitly, listen, like, I have a responsibility in my world, so I have a responsibility to you. And therefore, I'm not objectifying you. I'm simply saying that in my world, I want to sort of protect my sort of cosmic world.
Yeah, I think Philly is telling the other guy that what you do doesn't really matter to me. I'm just
no, it does matter to me. That's why, in theory, I wouldn't want you to do it. But the point is, I'm not going to say, because of that, right, you're an awful person. I'm simply saying that this is the way I believe. Same way I respect your choice, respect my choice. It's the same idea.
I guess, but then if you're always going to be, like, machmir, then you're never going to have, like, a that situation.
But that's the reality of life. In other words, the reality of life is people do things or don't do things based on other people's choice. I mean, that's how life works, right? In other words, I will say, I'm not comfortable, you know, I know that people are very makeable about Corona. I'm not, respect, I understand where you're coming from, but respect my space, right? So that's how conversations happen all the time. It's a different conversation, okay? Yeah.
I don't understand. So if they were explicit, if someone said to you, either I'm coming to your house or I'm going to
the okay, that may be a different case. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about a case where you just invited him over. You're trying to bring people closer to Jesus. You have no idea what they're going to do. If you know explicitly what they're going to do, you're going to a nightclub. Let's say, for example, say, I'm going to go to a nightclub with non-Jews and I'm going to eat treif while wearing kilayim. Okay, so yeah, so in that case, you would say, okay, cost benefit.
So ask him, what are you going to
do? Okay, but that's fair enough. Okay, so in theory, that could be possible. Now, so if, for example, you said to him, like, what are your plans? He says, I'm planning to do 35 Yisurim. Right, so then you talk about, but that's what I was talking about. I'm talking about this case. Again, this case is a case where he wants to, the people want to invite someone for Shabbos. This is not a case of like, this is a case where you're doing Kiruv, right? You're trying to engage people who are not connected. So it's not a case where you're going to ask them, what do you do for Shabbos? You just put up a poster saying, come to Friday night dinner, right? But they're going to drive. So the question is that allowed? Okay? Let me tell you one last thing, because a lot of time I'll take questions afterwards. This is a tshuva from Rav Moshe Sternbuch. Rav Moshe Sternbuch is a very interesting Chori Posek, okay? He has a tshuva called Tshuvas Konhagos. He's a rabbi from Johannesburg, okay? He's extremely makeable about this. Look what he says. This is incredible. He says, "Nira she yisoda isluf neiver who dumia deiver shemachshilo." This is great. What does he say here? What does he pick up on? Lif neiver is rooted in what? Kavana. Aval im kavana to rakut toivas atzmo lo nigra machshil. This is the most intuitive svara. What is he saying here? Lif neiver in the pashup shot of Rashi assumes you're doing something bad. If you're doing something good, it's not lifnei iver. Look what he says. He says, "Kach gan halo ein kavan sod lahara lo ola hayetso eight sixteen elgigas el shemikave bazel lahadricha mekarvu mederecha emes." I mean, what's his point here? He says, "Listen, it's true they're going to drive. That's their choice. But if your motive in inviting them over is to show them Shabbos, how could that possibly be lifnei iver? I mean, lifnei iver at its core assumes negative intent." Right? So this is a totally different conceptual model. Meaning, so let me just summarize. We started out by seeing the Torah talking about lifnei iver. We said it can't be talking about an actual iver because it says v'ra'itam Elohecha. Then we said, well, what does it mean? It means taking advantage of somebody, giving bad advice, etc., etc. Okay? And then we said, who does it apply to? We said it applies to anybody, even if they're not blind to reality, sheet of Tosfos. Why? Because when push comes to shove, they know the truth, right? They're taivas libo, right? Their taivas taking over their reality. That was the sheet of the Tosfos according to the Rambam. Okay? And we saw another model, which Moshe Feinstein said, you know what? There's actually two dinim in Lifnei Iver. One is interpersonal, one is between man and God. We also saw Shlomo Zalman said it's about net total sin, and therefore you're allowed to do Lifnei Iver locally if it saves you more globally. Come to the Rav Moshe Sternbuch, because you know what? I'll give you a basic svara, intuitive svara. The nature of Lifnei Iver is your motivation is to do something bad. And therefore, if your motivation is something good, not a problem. Right? It's not a question of like taking advantage of somebody or objectifying them. It's simply a question of what is your motive? The clear context of the Torah in Sefer Vayikra, where it talks about it, is talking about taking advantage of people who don't know. So if you have a positive kavanah for him, not a problem. If you have negative kavanah for him, problem. And therefore the nafkamina would be, in all these cases, let's say, for example, your mom says, you know, pass me the drink. How can you do it, according to him? How can you do it? Or you couldn't get it. Say, for example, it's actually a more complicated svar, but it's something like this. I'm allowed to give it to my mom. Why? Because I'm not giving her the drink so that she can not say a bracha. I'm simply recognizing the fact that if I give it to her right now and create breakage between me and her right now, that's sort of bad for our larger religious identity. It's actually more of a Shlomo Zalman's far than a Moshe Sternbach's far. But still, the Sfar of Moshe Sternbach assumes that deep down, when push comes to shove, if your kavanah is a tov, it's not a problem. Yeah. Well, yeah, because here you're talking about kids who's driving to shul. It's a do right?
So it's saying even though we're not dealing in the world of shul to shul, you're still able to do that?
Yeah, because his whole point basically is that what's the issa rooted in? Meaning, he's basically dorish time of the crow. He's saying basically the issa is rooted in an idea that I can't take advantage. If my kavanah is what I'm taking advantage. Never issa. It's an intuitive svar. Right? It's not a svar that like, you know, it fits so naturally, but it's an intuitive svar. It's like your goal is to not take advantage of the guy, leave him alone. Okay? Okay, here's what we're gonna do. I know that people may be hungry and Minchas was 2 minutes ago. So I'm here and I'm eating lunch with you guys, or I'll be in that area so you can ask me privately. All right, Rabosa, as always.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The Shlomo Zalman approach, which is like I guess like the most utilitarian, like how far is that going from like negative responsibility to?
Do you know what I mean? Like